Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode 4 in the Kind Stop the Bad podcast series, where this time we're talking about the secret sauce and technology that powers Kind. I'm Melanie Hayes, Chief Marketing Officer at Kind, and I'm joined by Kind CTO, Luke Wilson-Moore. Hi, Luke.
Hello.
And our Head of Engineering, Paolo. Hi, Paolo.
Hi, Melanie.
As really, who better to speak about what powers Kind than the people who actually created it and manage it now? Again, thanks both so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us, Melanie.
So to kick off, we are asked a lot about how Kind actually works and the technology that powers it. So perhaps a good place to start in understanding this is to go back right to the beginning and understand how the Kind platform actually started. And I think this one had better go to you, Luke.
Sure. Okay. So it really started back in 2016. There was much less known about cyber risk then, but it was abundantly clear that it's a growing concern that can have a devastating impact on an organization. Andy, a Kind CEO, approached me as he was looking at the problem of cyber risk and how to classify the risk in a simple way. He was actually going into detail looking at the problem of what data could we get, where can we get it from, and how can we sew that together to create a decent overall view of what you might call a company's attack surface or its external infrastructure. So he showed me this process, which is inspired by some of the things that a pen tester might do or a security professional when they're consulting for a company. And I immediately could see how it could be made programmatic. So initially, I built a worker for each piece of this discovery process, starting off with a very small piece of information with some seed domains. And then you might find some similar domains. Then you find some other pieces of infrastructure. And from these pieces of infrastructure, you find even more. And in various ways, you combine these together into a useful picture of the organization's infrastructure. So these are things like IP addresses, the services they're running, the products they're running on those services at the open ports. And none of this is foolproof because the data is imperfect. But we discovered that with what was initially really quite a rudimentary technology, you can get really quite good results. So the system itself was built on a bunch of Python workers. So they were independent deployables. So there's no Docker, no containerization at this stage. And it was really quite hideous and inefficient because basically there was a Python script for each Amazon EC2 instance. They were spot instances, so they're dirt cheap, but the problem with that is that they can die at any time. And I had hundreds and hundreds of these running at one point, far more than we actually need to run the infrastructure. And part of this was because I didn't know what was happening on them. So many of them may have been dead or doing anything, I wasn't sure. And the reason why is I didn't bother to set up logging at the time. I was in such a hurry to get things set up. And I wasn't an expert in CloudWatch. I hadn't spent a lot of time building things with it. So I forgo the logging. I could see what was happening. I could see the events flying through. And we were using Amazon SQS, which is, it turns out it's actually quite limited, but it was perfect for that point in time. These workers use the competing consumer pattern in general. And they're all producing events on these queues. So you could just spin up more workers to get the work done quicker. And if some of them have died, or you don't know if they're working, you can just spin up some more and hope everything finishes off. And who knows, if you've got no logs, you have no idea whether it's happening or not. But in general, it was working pretty well. And we had a very technical sounding name for the platform at this stage, which was the sausage machine. So we had a decent number of organizations. We knew it scaled reasonably well, but we also wanted to show the power and the speed at which we could find these results. And how they really apply, the results really apply to the business. To do this, we needed a user interface. So at that point, I grabbed a template. It was actually fairly old-fashioned. It was full of jQuery, and I shoehorned React into it to get some basic templating going. And we ended up with a prototype, which looks really quite archaic compared to what Kind is today, but it did have the red, the amber, and the green. It had some very basic classifications of certain results into these red, amber, and green categories. And some of them are still in the product to this day. But there's much more that we've added since then.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Luke. It sounds like there was lots of good stuff in the beginning there. But how did this grow into what we have now? I'll ask you that, Paolo.
Yeah, I completely agree, Melanie, that there was a lot of good stuff from the very beginning. Luke already mentioned a few of the decisions that constituted trade-offs, which allowed him to focus exclusively in, as the term says, proving a concept while working on the POC, namely by deferring cost efficiency and insight into what the workers were working on in a granular level. So he mentioned logging. Also, he mentioned a few of the technology choices that were done with the intention of getting to conclusions as quickly as possible. After the POC serves its use, it's time to productionize the solution. Specifically, we want to take the main findings and mechanisms from the previous stage and focus on scalability, performance, resilience, and also flexibility, maintainability, and critically, cost efficiency. If now we talk specifically about our technical stack, so hoping that some of our listeners will be curious, we can talk about some examples of changes to the architecture and technical or which reflect this shift in focus. So the team carried on from Luke's sausage machine, which of course included Luke as well, but with wearing a different hat. And this team decided to containerize our services. And we used Docker for that. The next logical step was to set up container orchestration. And we used what's arguably the gold standard for that as well, which is Kubernetes. One of the key reasons for this was to be able to achieve a more efficient utilization of our computing resources. We kept the event-based producer/consumer model as a key architectural decision, but decided to replace SQS with Apache Kafka, which, as well as bringing the proven possibility of web scale, it originated from LinkedIn and is heavily used there as well as reportedly places like Uber, Tinder, and Netflix. Kafka also allows for more flexible messaging semantics than SQS. And going back to Docker, we also had now an abstraction layer, which easily allowed us to use programming languages other than Python, which could be better adjusted to specific use cases. And now we have services written in Java, Node.js, and Go or Golang, as well as Python. It's called a polyglot approach. Go in particular has been very popular with the team, been very practical, readable, and maintainable, and efficient for us. It's important to say we didn't do this to have a kitchen sink of programming languages. This definitely wasn't the goal. It's all to do with flexibility and the ability to take advantage of the capabilities of different languages and ecosystems, libraries, for example. And we're not considering adding any other language anytime soon, by the way. Just because we've created a set of base requirements to be able to run a new service on the platform that we've built. So if someone wants to build a new service in Erlang or COBOL, they'll need to write a lot of boilerplate code just to comply. Also, no one wants to maintain COBOL in the future, right? Now, to cover some aspects which have to do more with the high-level architectural changes, we saw some opportunities to further isolate the workers. For example, they were all given independent storage areas, not necessarily independent database instances of different types, but paving the way for that. It's ever shown to be adequate for the problems we work on. But at the minimum, we've isolated cache areas and database schemas per service. We know from experience that as the teams grow, and especially as we add more teams, if there is the possibility to share state via database, this, I'd say the worst type of coupling will find its way into the solutions. And that's a recipe for, at the very least, some headache. So by isolating, we also made this anti-pattern a lot more difficult to follow in the future. Other aspects we worked on while restructuring and standardizing certain aspects of our services involved making sure that they have consistent sets of responsibilities, clear boundaries, and represent business entities and processes which everyone at Kind, from engineering teams or otherwise, can understand and quickly and uniquely identify. This is heavily inspired by concepts from domain-driven design, and one of the big intended outcomes is actually organizational scalability. If you do this exercise correctly, it will be easier in the future to add teams which are truly autonomous. So in summary, we now have a production quality, modern solution using sound architectural principles and technologies, which actually inherited quite a bit from the proof of concept.
That's awesome, Paolo. Something that also crops up that we're asked a lot about is how we're able to find results so quickly. What's the magic behind doing that, Luke?
Well, as you know, and as Paolo has just explained, we've got this queuing system, which is now powered by Apache Kafka, got all these workers, and by and large, they're using the competing consumer pattern, which essentially means that they get a worker gets an event to process. Imagine, say, a new seed domain comes in, and there's five workers, and whoever gets it first wins, and only one worker can process that event. First on, that happens with events all the way through, and typically one event will lead to a cascade of many events, which will lead to an even bigger cascade of even more events, and so on. And so a single company can produce thousands and thousands of events. Now, if we processed all of those events in series, even if each event takes only a second or two, you know, I'm talking about a DNS lookup or running some sort of classifier, which might take a few milliseconds or a few hundred milliseconds, eventually it really adds up. But we do everything in parallel as much as we can. We try to reduce the sort of straight line from a customer putting in their details to receiving a complete start report or a complete kind on. Obviously, with kind on, it's never complete because we're monitoring on an ongoing basis. But to get to something that's useful, we want to reduce that wait as much as possible. And we've had a lot of debate about the best way of doing this. And we looked really, really hard at batch pipelines. And batch pipelines are really interesting because you can spin up tens of thousands of servers to process all of your users in an extremely quick and efficient way, where every server is being used to its absolute maximum capacity, and then you can turn them off. So you could do it for a single hour, say once a day. The problem with this is that you need a queue of new events ready to go when that hour starts. And with new users, it means you're going to have to keep them waiting until the next batch window. So imagine you have a batch window every day. Well, we'll process yesterday's, but then people have been waiting 24 hours. It's a very efficient way in terms of infrastructure and in terms of cost because you're maxing out the capacity of all these servers, but it's not actually the best for the customers because of this wait. So what we actually do is we have a real-time pipeline. So this allows for kind-on customers that have ongoing monitoring to listen for new events constantly, for new things that are going on, so we can continually monitor these customers. But it also allows us to listen for new customers, so that somebody who wants to run a new start report or somebody who wants to sign up to Kind On, they appear, we see the event, and then, you know, 10 events, 100 events, 1,000 events, even 10,000 events for some customers. And they're all running in parallel on this infrastructure that was sitting there empty or potentially empty, waiting for them. So we always run this infrastructure, even though it's not at full capacity. So it's inefficient, but this inefficiency is a trade-off that we have to make to give the best customer experience, which is what's really most important. So we have this amazing infrastructure, it's in place and it's waiting for the new customers to come in, but that doesn't mean you can't do some batching in some areas and that there aren't some efficiencies in batching in the background, if you like.
Excellent, thank you. So that's where Kind is at the moment in terms of the product. But in terms of new things, what have you found to be the biggest challenge in scaling Kind and adding new features? And I'll ask Paolo this.
Right. From a technical point of view, it's interesting that we have what I'm confident to claim is a future-proof architecture, but we have a relatively small implementation or an instance of this architecture. And this means that we need to make frequent trade-offs, which can be challenging. And generally, we all know, I certainly know from experience, that we're only one bottleneck away from the next scaling issue. And this happens even when you run sophisticated and comprehensive performance and capacity tests as part of your software development lifecycle. At Kind, we've had our fair share of performance issues at one point or another, and I'm sure we'll continue to encounter them going forward. However, because we're confident on the robustness of our foundations, we can approach these bottlenecks more calmly, if you will. Another big challenge, which is universal, has to do with integrations with third-party APIs, which are generally tricky. You have multiple vendors with varying types of SLAs and different levels of reliability and performance. So if you build a system to rely heavily on one, it's very important to have redundancy, back-off mechanisms so that you don't overwhelm a struggling service, for example. And you also need very mature error handling mechanisms. And this is something that takes a considerable amount of our time. Finally, we have the testing strategy. Everybody who gets into software testing learns about the test pyramid, which includes unit, integration, and acceptance tests in different steps with varying classifications in terms of frequency, speed of execution, and scope. We don't have dedicated testers. Our engineers are also responsible for testing automation. Actually, our product team gives us a great help in automating end-to-end API tests. But we can't afford to aim for 100% coverage, especially in every type of test. We need to focus on quality and good coverage of the most important areas of the code from a functional and business point of view. So yeah, these are the main challenges in building and maintaining Kind as I currently see them, Melanie.
Thanks, Paola. That's really interesting. And I know you mentioned the team, that we're really proud of them, but I know something we're also all really proud of is how quickly we get new features into the product for our customers. For example, at the beginning of the year, we saw a huge increase in the number of ransomware attacks and our customers wanting these risks highlighted specifically in Kind. How were we able to get our new ransomware feature in Kind within 8 weeks and do that so quickly? And I'll give this back to you, Paolo.
Yeah, no, that's a very good example. We wanted to deliver this feature quickly to help highlight these types of risks for our customers in an automated fashion. The first reason for success is, you've mentioned, Melanie, is I believe we have a truly talented and dedicated group of engineers. They're all bringing their experience from working in a bunch of different domains with different technologies and are focusing on Kind's mission and are truly on board to deliver our vision. Secondly, I think we're kind of reaping the benefits of the work which was done in restructuring our microservices and data architecture, including events and database schemas. We made sure we had built-in flexibility in the data model itself, the discoverability of the events belonging to specific domains by any other service without requirements or knowledge on which services produced them or how they were produced. The fact that we have small decoupled services means that we end up with reusing the expression building blocks to mix and extend, to build upon in different ways, as opposed to what's called a monolithic application or even the other extreme, a distributed big ball of mud, which is a famous or, shall I say, infamous anti-pattern for these types of solutions. The ransomware feature example is a perfect one for this model of building new features on top of existing capabilities because it falls under the category of what we call syntheses on top of more low-level risk and infrastructure information. To build the ransomware set of features, the team was able to focus on the synthesis aspect almost exclusively by parsing, filtering, and aggregating existing risk factors and related events. This modularity also means that releasing new features generally only requires deploying a few different components. So it's easier to release quickly and often, as the adage says. But by that, de-risking the release of new features very early in the process of developing this new feature. Technically, we have a platform and a system which makes it easy to add new functionality on top of existing functionality. I think this is the key factor. Now, on another viewpoint, I'd say our development process lends itself well to delivering quickly. We have a very pragmatic development process. I think we all have extensive experience at Kind with different methodologies. I even remember using Waterfall back in the day. And I'm sure all of us have used many different flavors of Agile, from Scrum to Kanban to incorporating concepts from Lean. More recently using the Spotify model, some people experimenting with scaled agile or SAFe. So there's a number of trademarked agile methodologies out there, right? I like to think taking the best from methodologies we've used before and that suit the team, current size, the fact that we're distributed, and that we already had, I'd say, a progressive working from home policy. And this was before the pandemic. And also it's adjusted to the type of work that we do.
Excellent. And hopefully we won't have too many big balls of mud. So if we had to sum up then Kind's secret sauce, clearly without giving too much away, how would you actually describe it, Luke?
There's a sort of non-technology answer to that, which is that we're learning every day more and more about our customers, how they perceive these risks and how they want to mitigate these risks and what they understand about these risks. And I think that in a way, the secret sauce is being able to bridge that gap. You know, there's all sorts of things we've done around recommendations, around ransomware, ways in which we can synthesize these complex results that are like IP addresses, protocols, services, product versions, CVEs, CVSS scores, and turn them into something that's really meaningful, either for the technical user who, just by the nature of technology, can't be a specialist in all of those areas, or even a non-technical user who wants an idea of the risks associated with a particular business. And then there's a lot of stuff on top of the data collection that is really unique to Kind, and we're really adding to that all of the time. And then there's the harder technology side of things. So we have this rather powerful event-based system that we're continually improving, and this allows us to produce these results quickly. But there are a lot of hairy tweaks and things that we've made over the course of the last couple of years that are really informed by the customer and the things that we're continuing to make. And then there's, on the other hand, the really clever stuff that we're doing around processing really large sets of data, using machine learning to be able to generalize or to make inferences about this data. And there are some techniques that we're using that are really quite new and come from some fairly emerging research, which I don't think have been applied in the way that we're applying them before. So there are a few things like this and things that are emerging in this space as well that we're looking at. I mean, I have to be careful I don't say too much and tell you all of our plans. This is some really exciting stuff that we're going to do, particularly as we start using larger and larger data sets as time goes on.
Excellent. And quite right too. We can't give too much away. Okay. And so before we wrap up, one last question. Are there any new technologies or processes you see Kind using in the future or near future that will be using cyber risk management going forward? I'll give that to you, Luke.
We'll definitely be making the best use of AWS and all the amazing stuff that they provide, as well as solutions from other cloud providers where they're useful. I think we'll be using a lot more very data-heavy technologies as we've started to process some really, really seriously large numbers of organizations. We'll also be introducing more and more data sources. There are pieces of data out there that we're not incorporating that we could be. For example, I'd like to do a little bit more about finding web vulnerabilities, which we're working on. What we really have to remember is that we're very laser-focused on what the consumer actually needs, what solves their problem and what addresses their needs.
And Paolo, what do you think?
Yeah, and actually just taking Luke's earlier point on idle resources waiting for work, this is certainly an area we'll focus on, which is making sure that we have appropriately sized infrastructure for the current volume of events going through the system. And that's achieved by making more use of the so-called serverless cloud services. In AWS's case, this represents things like Lambdas and API Gateway. And on the container orchestration side, improving what's called the auto-scaling setup. And this is both in terms of our Kubernetes cluster and the individual services, which varying numbers of instances. And as just generally, as our volumes grow with our code base, it will be very interesting to leverage the concepts which underpin the current architecture and to remove bottlenecks and tactical or transitional elements so that we can provide our services to more and more companies while keeping the costs low for them. And in fact, benefiting from economies of scale in multiple levels.
That sounds wonderful. Well, sadly, it's time to wrap up, but it's been a real pleasure speaking with both of you. And thank you so much for joining me and sharing your insights on our wonderful Kind technology and divulging, well, just a bit about the secret sauce that powers Kind. So it's goodbye from us now. If anyone would like more information on managing their cyber risks, please contact us at hello@kind.io and we'd be more than happy to help. Once again, thanks Luke and Paolo and to our listeners, and I look forward to welcoming you to the next Kind Stop the Bad podcast, which is coming very, very soon.